America. Today is Thursday, April the 7th, 2005, and this is the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, and we welcome all of you. We'd like to honor all our veterans and those serving in the military. If you would stand, please, or raise your hand. We are truly grateful for your service. Well, yesterday was a great day for Oregon in that the right to say the Pledge of Allegiance under God is going back to our schools. And I want to thank all the members who testified and all of those who are in the audience today who testified, and certainly want the committee to know that we're most grateful. Mr. Stembridge?
Yes, I had some administrative things that I... It's rare to have all the committee members or most of the committee members together at the same place, so I wanted to ask this. I need a head count for next Friday and Saturday, 15th and 16th. I have Representative Nelson and Representative Farr as saying yes, and the committee administrator is saying yes. Tom says yes. Boquist is saying yes. And Jones says no.
Pretends his regrets.
This is Representative.
Is this Klamath Falls? And
this is Roseburg White City Metropolitan. Klamath Falls. Yes, and with a tour of the... we're trying to arrange a tour of the Roseburg Medical Facility, the White City Clinic, and then Armories in Roseburg, Ashland, and Klamath Falls, which is Kingsley Field. And then we have a public meeting at the Community College in Klamath Falls.
And we certainly want to... let the Community College in Klamath Falls know that we appreciate them. They're one of only three in the university or community college cluster who have agreed to support our veterans in reducing the cost of attending college. So that will be wonderful to have that opportunity.
Madam Chair, I have a couple more things if you don't mind.
Good grief. All right, Mr. Stembridge, what else?
Tomorrow you have a field trip out to Camp Rylea, and then you're going to be going from Camp Rylea over to Portland on Saturday. I gave a copy of the itinerary to everyone. See where it says members need? It says it should say members need to get themselves out to McNary Field, and then there's a little map on how to get there. In the unlikely event of inclement weather, we will notify you, and we'll have a van to go in. And the time schedule is set up so that we will be able to make our public meetings, even if we have to use a van. A couple other things.
What's the flight time to Camp Rylea?
Approximately 1 hour.
And what's the transport?
I think you'd ask the
UH-60
National
Guard. UH-60 helicopter.
And what would that be?
A Black Hawk helicopter.
And is that used in warfare?
Yes.
Where?
Iraq.
That will be a great...
And where they want it.
That will be a great opportunity.
And Madam Chair, it's used for firefighting too, for transporting people around. So.
Great. So that should be even more meaningful, and we're certainly appreciative of the Oregon National Guard letting us tag along with them on their mission and dropping us off as they continue their flight training.
Another article that I have given to you, it refers to the creditors ignoring longstanding federal law. That comes from the New York Times. Bills in the Knapsack Sack, it says. I think it refers to... financial bills rather than legislative bills. Bills in the knapsack. Then there's an item on the bonus army that one of the members gave to me, and I've reproduced it for each of you. And then the Veterans Administration, or the Veterans Affairs Department, gave us the Veterans Affairs Healthcare Overview from the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs. This is new. I didn't know exactly when to hand it out, but that's for you. And then I did notice that the Portland airport, people, the Port of Portland, have put out a warning for extra noise for Saturday. I kind of looked for mention of the Veterans Affairs Committee, but it has to do with the National Air Guard Fighter Wing conducting training missions. So that's part of what we'll be viewing on Saturday.
Yeah. In all my years in aviation, I love this sound. I recall when we were moving the B-17 from McMinnville up to Centralia, Washington, there was a farmer in the field, and he heard the B-17. He didn't even look up. By the time we landed, he was there, and he said, "I heard that sound so many times while he was in the war," and he said, "I knew what it was." And, you know, it is just precious. Just so special. And he brought us a special configuration that we could put on the B-17 at the Spruce Goose Museum. And so I'm not the only one that loves that sound. Is there anything else, Mr. Stembridge?
That's all I can think of at the moment. We have these photographs we could pass around.
Okay, please don't keep these. I refused first because I wanted them. They are photos of various meetings.
Taken in committee last week when returning National Guardsmen were here. Last Tuesday, I believe.
Any other comments, issues that need to be discussed before we begin this morning? Okay, thank you. Okay, we have here our good Colonel Mike Caldwell. Ask him to come forward, and he's brought some very professional individuals that we have longed to meet and hear from. And I'll be darned if I'm going to say that acronym. I hope you warned them that we do have a penalty for that, and they contribute to the Veterans Fund.
Madam Chair, I didn't warn them. I would I will let you give them that stern warning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Military Department. With me today are three members of the Oregon Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve. Far left is Brigadier General retired Bill Docker, who is chairman of the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, commonly known in their little pins here of ESGR.
$1.
$1. And I will put that dollar in there. Mr. Ron Cannon, also a volunteer for Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, and also Director of Veteran Services for the Department of Labor out of Portland. Great friend of the reserve component, all military members and veterans, but clearly one of our great, wonderful people that we spend a lot of time dealing with. And to my immediate left is Colonel retired Bob Elliott. Bob is currently the state administrator, full-time administrator for the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve through some a program that was initiated by the National Guard Bureau. And the National Guard Bureau authorized the money for us to contract with Bob or to bring Bob on a right now, I think it's 1 year, and we get it 1 year at a time. Hopefully, we'll continue this. It's been extremely valuable. We used to do this basically volunteer, all volunteer, out of the Oregon Military Department. Bob works in the Oregon Military Department, but he deals with all services, and he deals with all components and all veterans that may have an employment issue. So we gave, we provided the office space, the telephone, the computer, and funneled the money through DOD to have him on full time, and we're very grateful for that. So I'm going to turn it over to General Docker, and then let them. You had asked, Madam Chairman, for a brief summary on what the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve does, and I know you had some questions that have come up over the past several weeks to reference this subject matter. So I'll turn it over to General Docker.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about, regrettably, one of the best-kept secrets in the Department of Defense. The Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve was formed in 1972, just prior to the ending of the draft in 1973. Maintained a Cold War paradigm, if you will, but their mission has always been to gain and maintain active support from public and private sector employers for the men and women of the National Guard and Reserve, as shown by a commitment to their employees participating in military service. That is the primary mission. We have three core competencies. One is employer outreach, where we go out and interface with employers, tell them about the employer support for the Guard and Reserve program. We told them about the USARA law. I'll put a dollar in the pot, which Mr. Cannon will address in a minute. And then we assign volunteers to as military unit liaisons to liaise with the military units. It is an all-volunteer, and Colonel Caldwell corrected me this morning, that includes being not paid, as opposed to the voluntary military force. There are 54 entities. Unlike the National Guard, where there are 54 entities, there are no standards, if you will. There are mission statements and core competencies, which we all follow. So each state has a committee roughly aligned the same, but they all have a different way of taking a look at employer support of the Guard and Reserve. At this point, I'll turn it over to Mr. Elliott, who is the one full-timer that we have. Again, Colonel Caldwell mentioned Mr. Elliott came on board about a year and a half ago, and that was a huge step forward for the employer support of the Guard and Reserve.
Thank you, General. Members, I thank you for the invitation today. The packet that I gave you...
Mr. Elliott, you know, for the record,
yes.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Bob Elliott, Executive Director for the Oregon Employee Support of the Guard and Reserve.
Thank you.
The packet I gave you, in there, on the left-hand side, on the back part of it, it has our ESG update that we put out. This just tells you what we've done over the last year. In there, it has some short stories, talks about our outreach, talks about seeking volunteers, that continue looking for new volunteers. Some of the people that we honor, it talks up on page about six there, it talks about our ombudsman program, which I'll talk about, and it has pictures of other activities that we've done. And on the back page, it shows a picture of a KC-135 where we took a bunch of employers on a boss lift, which I'll also talk about. The other fact sheet I gave you there, it's the role of the National Guard. And this will explain everything you may want to know more in depth. The unique thing that we have is this little tiny trifold card that you can fold up and put in your wallet along with everything else you have that basically has all the rights of a reservist. And it's a very small document that's easy to carry around, and we, all of our volunteers, have these, and we give these to the soldiers, also to the employers. So it's if anybody has any question, it's a very small document. On the right-hand side, the blue document is a non-tech guide, and Mr. Cannon will talk about that. But this basically takes the inch-and-a-half law and puts it down to about 14 pages. And it's yes and no, and just basically the covers the entire law that most HR departments might need. The unique thing, I have this little poster here. This is a brand-new law that was just passed by the President and through the Congress. This is a new requirement that every employer in the United States now has to post on their bulletin boards, and if they have a reservist working for them now, they have the requirement to brief soldiers, Navy, all the Marines, everybody, all the reservists, what their rights are in their business now. This is a brand new, Ron Cannon just got these printed. Our agency is trying to get these out to employers. So this is a big step forward. So instead of the soldiers going to their boss saying, hey, this is what I need to do, and you know, now it's turned around where the employers have to brief each employee what their rights are under their HR policies.
And then, Elliott?
Yes.
Pardon me. You know, we have over 330,000 small businesses in the state.
Yes.
And yesterday, thanks to a good hearing in Good Alan Brown's committee, we had him ask Secretary of State what they do with that list, because they bump the cost upon the annual report, and which is 2.5 times what it should cost. They sell that list.
Yes.
Are you aware? You might as well take advantage of it.
Yes. And then I got to pay postage and everything else. No excuses, but yeah, it's a lot of management. We're trying, our committee is working on, there's a civilian information requirement, and what we have focused on is having the reservists go online and register who their employer are. And we've got over 1,500 that we need to contact now. And so what they're asking National saying is to focus on those that we know have reservists working for them, because of my volunteers, I only have so much time that they'll work. So what we're doing is we're having mailers out to those employers, and we're making personal visits to those 1,500 that we know of right now. With the return of the 2162, we had about another 300 register. So those are going to go to the top of the list that we want to make sure we get back and visit. So before we go mailing out to the 300,000, we're going to try to make contact with the ones that we know have reservists, get this document to them, and make sure those returning soldiers and the current reservists, I should say, and the current reservists are contacted.
Mr. Elliott, what do you do when you know that the rights are being violated? For example, these soldiers continuously being asked, are you re-upping or staying in the Guard? What should a veteran do?
Okay. Thank you for the lead-in. The last document in the packet is a website listing of all the contacts that they have that they need to go to. If there's any problems, these are all at every reserve facility in this entire state.
Great.
My volunteers, our volunteers, I should say, we have a liaison with every community. And we mail these out to them. They take them down to the reserve centers, you know, either whatever branch, hang them on the wall, put them on the counters. So if a reservist does come in, usually the first contact is to the local full-time person that works at any armory, reserve center, Swan Island. They walk up to the counter and say, hey, I got a problem with my employer, and then they should reach out and hand them one of these.
Do you work closely with all the county veteran service officers?
I do not personally work closely with each one of them. I'm trying to make contact. I've been with the Douglas County, Klamath County, and Clackamas County is the ones I've worked with right so far, but I've not reached out to every one of them yet, no.
Madam Chair, just on that note, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is having a meeting with all the county veteran service officers at the end of this month.
Good.
We, the Oregon National Guard, is going to be at that meeting, and we're going to present, and we'll make sure that Colonel Elliott and his folks have an opportunity to do that as well. Val set this up, and so we're hoping that we can reach out to them at that point, which will help, I think, distribute this new document and get the word out.
Thank you.
And my involvement so far has been with the trying to get jobs for returning reservists, because that's how I make outreach with those counties. So to answer your question, so if a reservist does come in and has an issue, then they have our phone numbers. They can contact an 800 number at the national level. We try to have it done with my number, which is all over. I carry a BlackBerry. I can be contacted most of the hours of the day. I talk to those individuals. If it sounds like it's a valid claim, I then forward it to Mr. Jack Cronice, who is our ombudsman. He's a retired Air Force CW5 warrant officer who deals with the issues and tries to find out if it's, in fact, a violation. And then he makes contact as the ombudsman. And then after, let's say it doesn't work out, the employer says, I still don't want to, you know, hire the person back. Mr. Cannon will speak in just a moment some examples and what he does, and then we pass it to the Department of Labor. So we're sort of the white hats, and he tries to be a white hat and a black hat. But we are the white hats, so we work with them.
What about these men and women whose job was totally eliminated while they were gone? Like they said for one of the city of Salem.
Yes, and if I give you the background on that, we did look into it. Senator, Councilmember Dan Clem, I believe Brian got all the emails on that. That individual was a part-time employee with the city, and when he came back, the city eliminated that entire environmental section, went to a contract. The city did not violate anything, and they looked into it. They did offer him some other positions. The individual, excuse me, any question? Needs a little bit more work on his resume, and he did not mention anything in his resume about his experience with the military, which would have probably helped him a little bit. So the council member Clem and Connie Wiggins, the HR director for the city of Salem, we met, and they have come up with a new policy for the job fairs. They will ask if they are members of the military or ever have served, and give them a little extra assistance, just like they do for some minority groups that cannot speak English as a first language. So they're going to not make them a special group, but they're going to include them in that group that they take a little bit extra care with. And then they will have make sure they explain their military. It's pretty hard to take what you did in Iraq and put it into a, you know, a job that you might be able to do here in Salem. But with all the 10 reasons that they should hire reservists and all the leadership and all the other attributes they get and the big drug-free issue that we have, basically our guardsmen are drug-free, and that's an attribute that they're looking for. So in regards to the city of Salem, that it was looked into. Brian Broquist brought it up to me immediately. I had the city council member there. We buzzed around, a little confusion, thinking it was the current returning soldiers that were, you know, that came back. And then I found out later it was a year ago with a group out of Albany. And so it was rectified. And then the city is reaching out to that individual, and they're going to try to get him to come back and apply for some more jobs. Mr. Cannon,
I'll publicly acknowledge Salem doing that.
And he would have had priority in hiring if he would have listed the fact that he was a military person and applied for fire or city police jobs with him. But the current job he was in was not one of the really good veterans' priority.
Thanks, sir.
Representative Beauclerk.
Just to follow up on that, and I had a discussion with the city council, or city council member, and the city itself too, and the position was actually an interim position. Well, they did eliminate the department. It was the soldier was hired, and so he really didn't lose his job while he was gone to Iraq. And to the benefit of the city, when the city found out, I mean, they didn't even know he was a veteran or had been at its service at the HR department, and they've offered him training, resume assistance, and everything else.
Right.
And so the city is working with it. Once again, you know, many of the rumors you hear, there's always 5% truth, and from there on, the percentage is questionable. So.
Well, that's great.
Thank you. I have a question. You know, it looks like you're doing a great job with employers, but, you know, I think the bigger question is, how do we get employers to really engage in this process? And I can illustrate that with a story. My husband, who was a National Guard officer, in order for him to attain promotions at the firm that he was employed with, because it was a retail establishment, you know, they just told him that he would have to get out of the Guard because they you know, he would have to work on the weekends. That now this has been several years ago, and I don't know what the new requirement is, but I think it would be very difficult for you to address that, because obviously the employee isn't going to come talk to you about it because they want the promotion.
We deal with it every day, ma'am. I just had one yesterday, and a soldier was told, if you join the Guard, I will let you go. And that's a violation of law, which Mr. Cannon can address.
And I can follow up?
Yes.
Well, in this particular instance, it wasn't the employer saying that he would let the employee go. It was him specifically stating that the employee would not receive a promotion.
Violation of law.
Same thing.
In your little blue binder, it specifically talks about past, current, and future. And the future is what we were talking about with the soldier. Then he went ahead and enlisted, by the way. He ships on the 10th of May, this individual I was talking about. So he's standing up to his employer with representation from the ESGR committee.
May I follow up? Just how would you address that, though? Because if an employer is looking at promoting an employee to a position of authority and is maybe looking at several different employees within the organization, then couldn't they just simply say, we decided to choose someone else, and then there's no violation?
They could. And one of the questions you asked earlier is what you could do to help. And I just asked Colonel Caldwell, if we could get a community service message from the governor and had that spread on radio or on TV saying, you know, the employers are part of this battle, that would be a big touch for us. We do have employer outreach, and I have 104 volunteers, and we're continuing that every day, trying to go out and talk to employers and educate them. Education is the key. And usually, any business that has an HR department understands the law. It's the small mom and pop operations that are the ones, and you know, they don't have an HR department. It's just trying to make a living, and it is a real hindrance on them. And I believe there's some tax. There are some other bills I've seen. They're talking about some tax relief and tax credits and things like that. Once if those become enacted, I'm sure they'll be educated by their CPAs and things like that. They tell them, you know, hey, if you hire a guardsman, you're going to get these tax breaks and stuff like that. And then Juan has not had a chance to speak. and then he might be able to answer some of your questions. Do you want to say something first, General?
Madam Chair, a quick clarification. The mission of the Employee Support of the Guard Reserve does not include finding a job for returning reservists and guardsmen. It engages the employers and the guardsmen or reservists. But I would like to applaud the Oregon Military Department, who has taken a holistic look at the guardsmen and reservists, the seven reserve components, from family support to employer support of the Guard Reserve, and now to finding jobs for them, even though that is not part of the Employee Support of the Guard and Reserve mandate. The state of Oregon has taken that huge step forward.
Committee, this week I found out that we do have various private enterprises working in this area, one in Wilsonville, and for the good administrator, the one name I got was Fishback, and just because I'm a fisher, I don't know why I remembered that one, but I did. Having to throw the fish back, which I always have to because they're not big enough. Could you find this organization? They are spending their time doing exactly what the Employee Support of the Guard Reserve is not, in finding jobs. So it'd be interesting to have them come and tell us what they're doing.
Great.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, General Doctor, would you just confirm so that it's on the record and everybody understands? The employer supports the Guard, and your volunteers work for Bob, and though Bob is paid through the military department, support Marine Corps reservists, Army reservists, Air Force reservists, Coast Guard reservists, to support the whole gamut. Is that correct, sir?
Absolutely. We call it the seven SEALs. The two Army components, Guard and Reserve, the two Air, Guard and Reserve, the Navy Reserve, the Marine Corps Reserve, and the Coast Guard Reserve. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Ron Cannon. I'm the Director for U.S. Department of Labor, Veterans Employment and Training. And it's our responsibility to administer the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act, lovingly known as USERRA. Now, do I have to feed the kitty on that?
Yes, you do.
Okay. I got my charge card with me.
Several times.
Okay.
We're setting up a veteran emergency relief.
Good, good. I'll be glad to contribute to that. First of all, on our poster, the poster is downloadable from our website for free. And some of the consultants are getting in touch with the employers and selling that poster. So anytime we get a call from an employer or a consultant or, you know, anyone, we do direct them to our website. And it is the first website on the list of that you have in your packet. It's found at www.dol.gov/VETS. And it is the first item that comes up on the web page. So you can access that poster, download it, and have it available to employees and potential employees, anyone who is affected by the law, by USERRA.
Mr. Cannon, I want to be sure, USERRA protects every soldier. Right.
Every soldier. It protects. Also, it protects veterans based on their veteran status. So it does protect the reservists, the Guard members. It protects.
And what is that dependent upon status? What does that mean to you?
To me, it means if they are connected in any way to the reserves, to the whether they're affiliated, whether they have orders to commit to active duty or inactive duty for training, they are protected by the law.
So what is your definition of a veteran?
My definition of a veteran is a person who has served at least 180 days of active military service. That's a veteran. Reservists and National Guard are those who are committed to the state components or the Guard Reserve components.
If we adopt the bill that we've already passed that one in this committee, defining a veteran, it's been passed.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a different interpretation, and will you still support these guys according to the state law?
We will support them per the federal law. We have to, of course, per the federal law.
If you find a veteran is one who spent one day in combat, will you support him?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They are connected to the military, and that's our connection to the soldier. And the federal law does, if they do spend, thank you for correcting me on that, do I get to feed another dollar into
that? Volunteer.
If they spend one day in combat, yes, they become a veteran. Absolutely. Under the federal guidelines. Thank you. Yes.
But the USERRA law covers even those that try to join. So don't, it doesn't have
to. Oh, really?
That's what I tried to explain to you. So the soldier that I had the other day, he came to his recruiter, and he told his boss that he was going to try to join the Guards, and his employer said, "You can, I will fire you." And he came to us, and we're going to go back and educate the employer. He is protected, and even witnesses, if someone overhears that, and he goes, you know, says, "I heard the employer say that," this law also protects them through the Department of Labor, not ESGR, but the Department of Labor. So veteran is not really a term that we need to use. It's anybody that has anything to do with the military.
We also focus on getting the word out, too. We work with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to reach out to the CVSOs out in the out across the state.
And I'll just say
county vets are, yeah.
Just hold it while you talk.
Send me the bill, will you please? The county vet service officers throughout the state, and we are asked to their annual conference training sessions to provide updates on the federal law.
Great. I questioned earlier when we had changes in medical benefits, we asked the DOD why they don't do some public announcements via television to let people know that their benefits have changed. This would be a great one. I know from being an employer that we put these things on the bulletin board. Mm-hmm. I mean, rarely, maybe once in 10 years, do I even, you know, or did I even look to see what it was about. And I think that is probably a habit.
The Department of Defense tries to, and well, the Department of Labor tries to get messages out through public service announcements, press releases from Secretary Chow, and we try to distribute that nationwide to all the media, and depends on if they want to run it. We currently have a public service announcement out, videotape, that was distributed to television stations, radio stations around the audio portion, of course, radio stations around the state.
If we could get copies of that, I would bet that most of our representatives and senators have cable, and mm-hmm. they will accept that.
Outstanding.
Without any burden, and
we would love the ride.
We could help you out.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I might just add one other item for outreach. Annually, we have a standard set of briefings that are mandatory that we give all of our membership, 8,000 Guardsmen, and the employer support of the Guard and Reserve is part of that annual briefing. So we have commanders at every level that are required, and we usually do it in December, and every year in December we put this out to our drilling guardsmen. With respect to the returning guardsmen, the employer support of the Guard and Reserve group, Ron, all three of these gentlemen, has spent a good deal of time with the demobilization ceremony or activities, explaining these very rights and giving these packets to each and every one of the veterans who have returned from their active duty. So we really work hard at making sure that our membership does this. I'm not familiar enough with the reserve component, other reserve components, to say they don't, but my hunch is, given what I've heard from these gentlemen, they spend a lot of time with those reserve centers and working with those commands as well. So I think, generally speaking, the members of the Guard and Reserve in the state of Oregon are very well served by this committee. This is one of the most active committees, I think, in the nation.
Great.
They have spent, they've got one of the most extensive lists of volunteers that are active, not just signed up to go to, you know, an annual function. Our Guard and Reserve representatives, employer support of the Guard and Reserve representatives, work extensively in our communities, and they're very familiar with every command and every unit that's in their region. So we're very fortunate in this state. Doesn't mean to say we don't have issues. We have them all the time. We as was indicated, our goal is to educate people. Our goal is to make sure our employers understand what the law is. If they refuse to play ball or listen to reason, then we ask Ron Cannon to put his black hat on and use the federal attorney. And in some cases, they've actually gone. I don't think you've ever gone to a full court match with these folks. They usually, at some point during the process, recognize that they need to get in compliance, and they do comply. You can never prevent the subtleties that Representative Farr was talking about. I don't think that's feasible without a cultural shift and education, as Bob indicated. And that is one of our great dilemmas, and it's always going to be there. I don't think you'll ever get rid of it. But I think it does matter that we try very hard to get them educated.
If a soldier's capabilities change because of a war injury, does the employer is he required to find another position for this soldier?
The employer is required to make every effort possible to try to find a position that will work as far as the abilities of the soldier employee. So it's basically like the workers' comp laws. They are to try to fit them into another position with minimal training and also with the use of support components such as voc rehab to upgrade the job site or try to give us some revisions or some type of training to help the person out and become productive.
That's good. Any other questions? Representative Boquist.
Follow up to Ron. And this is dated, but I'm actually looking for a confirmation of change. In the 1990s, I was involved in a court case in the fine state of Washington, and the response from the Department of Labor was that as long as the soldier had money to hire his own attorney, we would not get involved at all. Can you respond to that? I know we're a long ways, we're in a different environment than we were back then, and we're a couple iterations of this law forward, but your position for the representing the federal government in the state of Oregon.
I'm not familiar with that one. And whether they have money or not, they have a right to protection under the Act and under USERRA. Another dollar.
How many is he up?
$5. But yes, they do have protection. We don't care how much they have in their pot. It's the fact is this law was made for them. It's federal law, and we are standing by to help them out.
Now, one point, and we don't know the whole story in that. If the individual, the business, does not listen to the ESGR, does not listen to the Department of Labor, and the reservist chooses not to use our services on their own, they can get legal, go out in the outside world and take that employer to task legally and try to get damages. We do not represent them once they do not listen to, they just cease and desist from using the Department of Labor or ourselves. They can get a private attorney and go after the company if they'd like to.
Yeah, that's their right. We do inform them of their options, and that hopefully was misinterpreted. But well, that's sad.
Yeah, just the record, man. It went to court. I testified, against it. The Department of Labor refused to support the soldier because the soldier still had a house and still had money.
Wow. They are given. We make sure that they're aware of their options, and that includes if they wish to choose private counsel. They most certainly can, but we do let them know that we are available to help them out.
And one follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Boquist.
Before they depart, that if General Doctor, when he summarizes up, could give us maybe a list of things we can do besides what was represented by Bob. Because I think this committee could be a good avenue for pushing information out.
At this time, I want to pause and introduce these brilliant, competent kids who are going to lead our nation in the future. This we have 20 students, or looks like more, maybe, from Perrydale High School. And I want you all to stand. Look at those FFA jackets.
Yeah.
And that tells you about leadership right there. And we're proud of y'all.
Hey, Madam Chair, for the record, part of them are in my district.
How many of y'all are 18? Where do you live?
London.
And the young man next to you? Amity? Okay, you can have one vote, and I'll get the other. Thank you, and their advisor, Kirk Hutchington?
Yes.
Where are you? Oh, well, thank you very much for bringing these students here. Have you registered to vote?
Yes, I have.
And let me ask the young lady, have you? Hey, Representative Boquist, you got a challenge. I'm ahead by one vote.
No, Madam Chair, they're coming to my office at 10:40.
You're going to have registrations right there, are you?
For all.
Well, we're proud of you, and if there's one organization that in our schools that really teaches leadership and personal management, time management, money management, entrepreneurial activities in FFA, and I'm a total sponsor, and now y'all just made me have to pay a dollar, because every time we use an acronym, the Future Farmers of America, we put a dollar in our veterans fund. So
Chairman, we haven't been Future Farmers of America since 1988, so
it's not an
what is
an
it
acronym. FFA doesn't stand for anything anymore.
All right.
So you're saving. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
No, ma'am, a dollar, not a 20.
Thank you very much. We are talking right now to the employee support of the Guard Reserve group, headed here by General Brigadier General Doctor, and also Ron Cannon, who is with the U.S. Department of Labor, and Bob Elliott, who is the only full-time employee of this volunteer group. And we are so impressed. It's probably the best in the entire nation. These individuals work very hard to assist our military, our veterans, in being ready to take over a job, to help them learn how to do resumes and employer search and that sort of thing. And it's wonderful. And with them, we have Colonel Mike Caldwell, who is a 30-year veteran here, and he has been the liaison with our Veterans Committee. This is the first time in over 50 years there's ever been a Veterans Committee focused on our veterans. We have over 370,000 in our state, and most recently, you know, the 162nd Infantry returned home. They've been over in Iraq for 18 months and restoring a democratic government, and they're now legends. Also, I want to mention that Colonel Caldwell also operates the Youth Challenge Program over at Bend, which is a very, very successful program for students that need a little more self-discipline. So in case you have any friends that might need to get in that program, it's absolutely outstanding. They've got like a 99% record for accomplishment and graduation, and really proud of that program. We are worrying right now because 50% of our soldiers who returned home do not have jobs, and that's our focus today, and that's what we've been talking about. We've been working on with our colleges and universities to get educational benefits and also vocational training benefits, so those who do not have a job can get them. And we've also been made aware that our soldiers, our National Guard soldiers, were called up under a Title 10. They usually operate under a state Title 32 category. Title 10 is, of course, relates to a war. And anyway, there is a program called USERRA that specifies that employers may not discriminate against the military, may not discriminate if they're disabled because of the war, must give them an opportunity to work where they were prior to leaving. So we want very much to protect our soldiers. Because of these men sitting here and in the audience and the 370,000 across the state, we're sitting here today and I can say anything I want to. We know freedom isn't free, and it wasn't free, and we're most grateful that the Speaker of the House saw it fit, you know, at this time to reestablish this committee, because we have long forgotten our veterans, It's been a long time since we fully supported them and expressed our appreciation. I hope every one of you kids have a yellow ribbon on your car, and that makes me proud. I'd like to ask a question. We have been apprised of the individuals returning from war, things like when they went into war, they were supposed to be able to cap interest on a loan at 6%. However, we found that many soldiers have had foreclosures, their cars have been towed away, their homes have been taken. Something's haywire here. And I'm just concerned that a lot of the financial institutions may not be aware that that is not allowed.
Yes, ma'am. Some of that are true facts. That does not fall under the preview of the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve. It falls under the Soldiers and Relief Act, which is our JAG, Mark Ronning, who will help any reservist in this state with any of those contacts. They also
the JAG?
The lawyers. Judge advocate. But the State Bar Association, I hope you're aware of it, has found volunteers throughout the state that will help any of those individuals. So how that program works is if they do call our office, I turn them over to our family program, Diane Gooding, her network. We'll get a hold of those people. They will get them resourced to or directed to the resource of our JAG office, who will then screen them. Am I correct? He will screen and make sure they're a valid claim, and then he makes contacts to the bar. The bar then finds a lawyer in that local area that represents them for free.
I can't think of anything, you know, sadder than to, you know, be leaving this country to restore freedom in another place and your freedoms are taken away, you know, while you're over there and you can't do anything about it. You lose your home, your car, your spouse and children, you know, homeless. It just makes me sick.
Madam Chair, I might just add that the Deputy Attorney General, Pete Shepard, was the focal point or the person who came up with this volunteer lawyer situation for guardsmen and all service members, not just guardsmen, reservists, all service members, to create this network of attorneys throughout the state who would take these pro bono issues on. And Pete was the driving force behind that. We didn't suggest it. He came to me early on, right after we started mobilizing a good number of guardsmen, recognized that there was issues, talked to our Judge Advocate General, Assistant Judge Advocate General, Major Ronning, and we set that network up, and it's been very successful. The Bar Association throughout Oregon has leaned forward in a big way to assist these families and assist these service members in causing institutions, employers, you name it, you know, landlords, to comply with the Civil Relief Act, the Servicemen's Civil Relief Act. And so it's been a big help. We've had several successes. It's been rather quiet because they intervene at an early state and you don't see the headlines because they've just been like a laser beam getting in and taking care of these things as quick as we're notified on it.
I think that's awesome. And we've asked a good administrator who has tennis shoes on that aren't Nikes to get in touch with them. We'd like to have them come. We know there's not enough money in legal aid to handle all these problems for the soldiers, and likewise the soldiers don't because they are paid so little. And that's another thing.
Well, we're very grateful to Pete and his efforts in the Attorney General's office. He also set up the, you may have seen it down here in the Galleria, where you can write a service member email. It's once a week down here. That's another one of Pete's ideas. And so he's been very proactive. He's been leaning forward trying to find ways to assist families and service members. And I don't know. I don't think Pete is a veteran, but he's incredibly dedicated.
Well, we'll certainly find them. Thank you. Any other comments you'd like to make, General?
Yeah, let me just respond to Representative Boquist's comment. We would welcome the opportunity to work with your committee on ways to outreach. One of the most daunting tasks that we have, and you used the number 330,000 small businesses in the state of Oregon, as you know, one, two, or three guardsmen reservists from a small business can be crippling to them. But getting the outreach to them with 104 volunteers is overwhelming. But if we could find venues, speaking venues or conferences that we could go to get the word out, we would look forward to that.
And, General, I'd like to offer the services of our senators and representatives. If we have those forms that need to be posted, information that local districts need to know, we have town halls all the time, and we're happy to disseminate that information for you. Maybe that'll help get to those 330,000 small businesses that keep Oregon going and make something good happen. Representative Boquist? Barnhart?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I was late this morning. I was in another committee working on another bill. So this may have already been asked, but I'm wondering if you have considered using the Chambers of Commerce to use that as a vehicle for approaching small businesses. They of course have very good communication systems to communicate with their members, and that might be another avenue you could use.
Yes, we have. There's a special website at our ESGR website for chambers alone by itself. They can go to that. I've been personally to the Chamber of Commerce Awards banquet in La Grande, and I got the governor that morning announced the mobilization of the 3116. I was there that night because it takes a day to get the news over there. I was there that night. I got to announce that at the dinner, and as a guest speaker. We did a NASCAR promotion at the Chamber of Commerce in Albany. It's in your gray binder. There's a folder. You'll see a NASCAR. We did a promotion there, provided a lunch, and did a briefing there. And I've been to many other groups talking to them. So we do use them as a format, and we also go to the League of Oregon Counties, the Oregon Cities, League of Oregon Cities. I go to those conferences, and I do luncheons all over the Rubber Chickens. I go to all those functions I can go to, and I'll go to any I can. Thank you.
We're most grateful if you fully coordinate with the county's county veteran service officers. They're really right there with our soldiers. We are funding them this session. They've been funded at a 2/10 of one person, and most of them then that would give them, if we divided up 1,400,000, that's the families with the soldiers among them. I mean, they'd have over 40,000 clients apiece. We're expecting an awful lot, but they are our most current link to what's policy and new rules and new benefits, and so we'll greatly appreciate that coordination. Any other questions or comments, committee members?
I would just like to ask if the testifiers could leave a business card with the committee assistant so we can make sure we get your name spelled correctly for the record.
Madam Chair, I may correct the record. Being from LeGrand, spending 35 years of my life there, it really isn't that bad. We get yesterday's news tomorrow.
Yesterday's news story. That's good.
My suspicion, Colonel, is that this news will get there faster.
General, Dr. Mr. Cannon, and Mr. Elliott, thank you so much for caring about our military, our veterans.
Our pleasure.
You've been awesome, and of course, Colonel Caldwell is unbelievable, and it was great of him to bring you here today. Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
I want to tell the kids what I announced earlier, because it was a great day in the legislature yesterday. We don't have that many great days. Oh, I love these honest men. A basket at the back. Thank you so much for using acronyms. But a great day in the state of Oregon yesterday when the House Committee passed the right to say the Pledge of Allegiance again. And you can say, under God. So we're grateful, and we're grateful that we're back to where we should be.
Madam Chair, may I clarify what we passed since I sit on that committee?
No.
We passed a bill that allows anyone who would like to say the Pledge of Allegiance to say the Pledge of Allegiance daily versus weekly, which is currently in statute. But it's voluntary.
Where is he going? This
time? Yeah, we'll just call.
We'll start it.
All right.
May I make a suggestion? Could we hear, if we have public testimony from like League of Oregon Counties and Cities, could we have them testify on these property tax bills at the same time, because there's six of them, and they're all relating to property tax exemptions?
That's probably a good idea.
Okay.
Is there anyone else, anyone here who would like to make a general comment today? Of any sort before we start a public hearing?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor.
ask her to see it, and she said no.
These are the property tax bills. We have sent for it.
Is there any more simple than this? I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2933. Mr. Administrator.
Oh, boy. This is the biggest fear of committee administrators, is we'll go down the list. Here's House Bill 2933. Discharges outstanding income tax liabilities of active duty military personnel killed in action, holds outstanding tax liabilities of active duty military personnel in abeyance until 6 months after active duty ceases, and it takes the effect the 91st day after signee died.
It's a deferment.
No, discharge means you don't have to pay. No, it's a deferment for other people.
Okay. Yep,
I think first we're going to hear from Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, Chair right now. Vice Chair, Chair. It's like Daryl and Larry. Thank you for letting me speak to House Bill 2933 today. Members of the Veterans Affairs Committee, this bill is so important. As you're well aware, we've been greatly remiss in providing life insurance for our veterans. I mean, $10,000 barely would cover the cost of the family, you know, to have the funeral or transportation or other things. So since that since none of our soldiers have had $250,000 of life insurance as we have proposed in this legislature, this House Bill 2933 provides that outstanding income tax liabilities of our active duty military personnel shall be held in abeyance until 6 months after active duty service ceases and shall be discharged, that means erased, if the taxpayer is killed in action. And it would take effect on the 91st day following adjournment. You know, I'm very sorry that the 8 soldiers of our Oregon National Guard who have lost their lives did not have this in effect. As I thought about it later, I thought perhaps we should amend this bill to make it retroactive so those individuals could be included. This is difficult for me to talk to. The greatest sacrifice is, you know, laying down your life for your brother, and that's what has occurred. I have great empathy and respect and appreciation for the spouses and the children. And we have done so little for so long in this state for our military and our veterans. We have a lot of catching up to do. So I'm hoping that you will support this bill. I'll try to take any questions from anybody except Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Colonel Caldwell.
Yesterday, I was in the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Colonel Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department. Appreciate the opportunity to testify on this bill. We don't have a fiscal on the bill, so I can't really speak to the fiscal other than probably what you can probably assume on your own, as the good chairman indicated. Representative Nelson, there's been 8 Oregon Guardsmen who were killed in action. 2 other Oregon Guardsmen were killed, one by an accident, and the other is still the 10th one. We have not got a determination from the Army as to the cause of death of that individual. Nevertheless, that individual did die in Iraq. The only thing I would just bring to your attention, the income earned in a combat zone is, and I know there's somebody from the Department of Revenue that can confirm it, is typically tax exempt. So there is probably very little impact with respect to the money earned outside the state of Oregon. And if you remember, the committee dealt with a bill earlier that I believe is, I'm losing track of all the bills, but we were trying to move that so we could ensure that soldiers that were on Title 10 active duty did not get taxed by the state of Oregon on that income. Last thing I would just point out to the committee, and again, I'm not suggesting that this isn't a good bill, but the Service Members Civil Relief Act does maintain that the maximum rate of interest that can be charged while on Title 10 federal active duty is 6%. I think in reality what occurs is that a lot of people are not aware of the Service Member Civil Relief Act. And in some respects, soldiers unwittingly, they can opt out of that protection. And I think in some cases that becomes fact, whether, and as I said, unwittingly, they find that they've been opted out. Maybe they didn't know what they signed. Maybe they didn't know what the question was, or it was worded improperly, or not real clearly, and so they end up being opted out and didn't know they were. So that is an issue, I think, at our level, and we've tried to educate our people when they are mobilized that you have these protections, and more importantly, we've tried to educate their spouses. They seem to pay a lot better attention, and we've done a yeoman's effort in trying to get all of our family members informed on this Civil Relief Act because of the situations that Representative Nelson spoke to earlier, where people have actually lost cars and other things because they didn't understand the protection under the act. And if they don't understand it, in the business or the creditor decides to execute on what is normally an act, unless it goes to court and a judge says, well, wait a minute, this person's in Title 10 service, they fall under this act, you can't do that. So in some respects, this may be a very good thing to have it in the Oregon Revised Statutes. So the Oregon Revised Statutes mirror what the federal statutes are, and that might inform people who look typically to the ORS, not the federal code, when you're dealing with a local court case. And with that, I will stop and answer any of your questions.
Questions for Colonel Caldwell? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
McConnell.
Chairman Nelson, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. We think the bill is a good bill, but we think that rather than killed in action, it should be lost their life while serving on active duty. This covers accidents that can happen anywhere at any time. And we think it should be go back to 9/11.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. McDonald? Thank you, sir. Are there any others to testify on House Bill 2933? If not, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2933.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Barnhart. Y'all really been helping me out this week. Yeah. Vice Chairs, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, we have the good Representative Jeff Krupp here from Staten, isn't it, Representative?
Sublimityville.
Oh, Sublimityville. And I would like to just say that for the benefit of my Perrydale FFA, that is not an acronym anymore, so I don't have to pay money to the Veterans Fund here. Representative Krupp has two terms in a row chaired the Agriculture Committee here at the state. He's been a farmer for many years. He's also a known voice. He's a broadcaster on KXL. Is that it? KXL. And he also took it upon himself to fly with Evergreen, and those of y'all, this is my district mostly, but Brian gets one vote. But mine is registered to vote. But the Spruce Goose people, the Evergreen International Airlines group, flew Representative Krupp over to Iraq, and he participated with our military actively, which was very brave of him. Thank you for being here, Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17, and thank you for those kind words. It was one of the great honors of my life to have spent some time on the ground with our forces in Iraq, our Oregon troopers. And out of that experience, as you have heard me say before in front of you, committee, a number of issues arose and discussions with troopers when I was with them. And one of them is the tremendous financial hardship in most cases that going to active duty, especially for the period of time that they were mobilized, and I'm specifically referring to the 2nd Battalion, the 162nd Infantry. The financial issues that arise at home are sometimes fairly severe. And one of the ideas and concepts that I discussed with people that I thought I would bring back and bring forward to the legislature is to allow a property tax exemption for Oregon National Guardsmen and Reserve who are called to active duty over 30 days. And this is a flat $1,000 property tax exemption. There is no fiscal impact to this to the state because obviously we don't collect the property taxes. This is a fiscal impact that will occur at the local level in our local counties. And while that may cause some concern for some, I would say that the debt that we owe the men and women that go to active duty to serve our country, whether that is abroad or here in America, by the way, is substantial, and the financial hardship that they bear on a personal level is far greater. And I would ask you to understand that it is far greater than any short-term financial problem that this bill might create for a county government. And I would ask you to consider that. And that's why I brought this forward. Now, you might think that you find it curious that I don't offer a tax exemption for those individuals who rent apartments and don't own property. Well, when you're called to active duty for a longer period of time, typically you give up your apartment. When you own a home and you have a family and you're called to active duty, you don't sell your home. And so the logic of it and the common sense of it is that the greater financial impact typically is upon those who own their own homes. And that's really what this bill is intended to address. It is limited, as you can see by the sheet that we have prepared for you. It's limited to $1,000 per year in any tax year that you are called to active duty. And that then precludes the inequities of those who have nicer homes, lesser homes, own a lot of property, don't own a lot of property. It's just capped at $1,000 is basically what it is. Again, it applies to only those that are called to active duty over 30 days. It's limited to assessed value of $60,000, again, roughly $1,000. A surviving spouse may also make the claim. And that is for the unfortunate reason of the bill you were discussing previous to me, is soldiers who've lost their lives in service to the country, whether in combat or in training. And it does provide the mechanism for the refund if necessary. Again, it's a simple concept. They are never simple in terms of their of policy implications, but I think it again it is worthy of us considering as a legislative body to provide this opportunity as a means of saying thank you. We appreciate the tremendous sacrifice that your service brings when you're called to active duty, again, for over 30 days. And I do want to clarify for you that on the first page, starting in line number 7 and 8, which is sub A under section 1, that it says, serving in the Oregon National Guard, military reserve forces, or organized militia of any state or territory of the United States. That is meant to mean Oregonians who serve in National Guard or reserve units outside of the state of Oregon. We have individuals in Ontario and Pendleton and Portland who serve in the Washington, Idaho Guards and Reserve units.
We
want that also.
How we've been able to, how we've been able to cure that is that we say soldiers whose home of record is Oregon.
Madam Chair, I think that's an outstanding idea, and if you'd like to amend the bill as such, that's certainly fine with me. You understand my intent and what we're trying to achieve with the legislation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, I personally want to thank you. Thanks for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Krupp, in looking at and balancing the however many bills Jim says we have across the board, would you be amenable if we looked at the 30-day mark and maybe moved it to like 45 days or 60? And the reason I raise that issue is I spent almost 30 years in a unit whose typical annual training has been 45 days per year. You're told going in, you're going to get 45 days. And I think the issue we're really addressing here that you're raising, Representative, is the fact that we have soldiers who get mobilized and then they start losing their houses and their homes and everything else. And that's generally longer than a 30-day period.
Madam Chair and Representative Broquist, that's an excellent suggestion. I'd be happy to take that under advisement, and if it would please the committee, I'd be happy to draft that amendment for you. No problem.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Chair Representative Krupp. To testify on this bill, I'd call Colonel Mike Caldwell.
Members of the committee, for the record, Madam Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Military Department. House Bill 3334, we're obligated to take a no position on the bill because it does have a revenue impact to some, certainly not the state, but to the local government. I would say, however, back to Representative Boquist's question, I think Representative Krupp did deal with what you just indicated in line 9. He says, performing services after a change in status from serving under Title 32 to serving under Title 10. And I think that clarifies immediately that unless you're activated, then you wouldn't fall underneath that in your case, where you do 45 days of annual training, unfortunately. I would say that I don't think there's any question, as the good representative indicated, from his on-the-ground chat with soldiers that are living and breathing deployments, and I think the same applies to the families here, that in most cases, these young men are young, and they do have they haven't matured in the income levels that we would typically think of the average, or we would like to think of average Oregonians. So the impacts are huge on deployments. And most generally, I would say, either suggest that they were underemployed, and as we know, large number of them were unemployed. So I think when you start winnowing out who is going to school, who owns property, this is not a large group, but yet it's a huge impact and a good signal, I believe, to the members of the Guard and Reserve who are serving their country. And with that, I will answer any questions you may have.
Representative Farr.
Thank you. Colonel Caldwell, as you know, earlier in the week we heard some bills that relate to a renter's tax credit for low-income guardsmen who are deployed. Do you have any figures to show how many guardsmen or reservists or homeowners or own property of some type?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, unfortunately we do not. We don't keep that data. I'm not even sure. I mean, we could do it. We could obviously do it. We wouldn't be able to respond in a very timely manner, unfortunately. It takes us a while to collect that data, but to my knowledge, we do not collect that data right now.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, would you say that out of the 40% that were unemployed when they left, it's unlikely that those 40, or I think another figure that was presented was 50%, would be homeowners?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, absolutely. I think that if you look at the national average of the age of the Guard and Reserve, we're typically older than the active duty. So as I've said in this committee on numerous occasions, the group that we're most interested in retaining are those folks that have served their first six-year commitment. We also know that typically we retain 80% of those people, and now we're retaining somewhere around 60% of those folks. So we've had a big reduction in our ability to maintain that group of people. So we, on average, are going to be older, and our soldiers are going to be probably more established. That's probably the other 50%. But generally speaking, when you have an 18-year-old individual who joins the Guard or the Reserve, in that six-year period where they do their first 6 years, their life changes dramatically. They either finish college, they either get a job that they see themselves in for a long time, and that's the group that we struggle the most to retain. And that is the group we would like to retain the most. So as you can see, this anything that we can add as they mature in their life cycle and they become homeowners and family members and this sort of thing, anything like that, I think, is a great benefit to us in our ability to retain these folks for both state and federal missions. So, again, that's my personal feeling, and I think it would mean a lot to that group, to both groups, the established group and the emerging group. So I see this as a positive retention tool as well.
Thank you very much. Representative Krupp, would you come back, please? We talked about House Joint Resolution 34 recently, and it was the right and good thing we decided to do what we did. What's happening many times is this individual does not have a surviving spouse, but he has surviving children. So I'm wondering if we could get a wordsmith to work that, because if the spouse, the mother, the children is deceased, I think that's something we should consider. We should protect them. So if you wouldn't mind, I would really appreciate it if you could include that in some term. I don't know how we do it if established, I don't know.
Madam Chair, a good suggestion, and I think Colonel Caldwell has a good suggestion on how to verbiage that.
Okay, great. I appreciate it. Would you work together on that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Any other questions, Representative Boakman?
Yes, Madam Chair. Colonel Caldwell, could you, just, for the record, average Title 10 to her? Keep refreshing the committee the Title 10.
Title 10 is the federal. I'm saying this for the kids here.
Madam Chair, Representative Boakman, the average Title 10 tour, that is conversion from drilling reservist or guard status to an active duty status under Title U.S. Code Title 10, has been running 18 months. I do not foresee that shortening. If anything, I think it has all the potential to go to the 24 months total. If you look at yesterday's paper and you see that the Army is one-third below its recruiting numbers as of last month for this year,
that's why I can't recount.
I don't see there's, and their effort was to try to recruit 80,000 new soldiers this year, and they're going to probably fall 25 to 30,000 short of that number. There is no way that I can see, just knowing the raw numbers, that we're going to see any reduction in deployments in the next 24 months. I just don't see that as a feasibility, particularly when they're trying to expand the Army and add at least two more divisions.
General Doug Pritt was here yesterday and conducted the opening ceremony for the legislature. And for all of our students, I want you to know that he will be the chief as our Oregon Guard, under his leadership, trains the entire Army of Afghanistan beginning next June. So I'm sure that won't take just 30 days.
No, ma'am.
But we can be so proud of our National Guard. They more have served and had longer duty than anyone, but that just speaks to the excellence of training in this state, and I want to give you credit. Hey, any other questions? Thank you very much, Representative Krupp. Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 3334? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3344, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2844.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2844 limits delinquent property tax interest that can be charged on property of state-activated National Guard members to a maximum of 6% for the duration of the activation.
Is it Joni Phillips? Joan?
John.
John Phillips. Is that John Phillips Souza? Were you named after him?
Distant relative.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. John Phillips with the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue oversees the property tax system and its administration through the 36 county assessors and tax collectors. And we try to focus on the administrative issues of bills that relate to property taxation. I just have today a handout that we sent to counties in December regarding this issue for interest rates, and it reminds counties about these Servicemen's Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act and the limitation of the 6% interest. And so I just wanted the committee to have this in their hands.
I can distribute it.
So under the Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act, that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that no more than 6% interest can be charged. So this is what you're talking about.
Yes, and that is the extent of my comments. I just wanted to be to advise the committee that we've been talking to counties about this issue, reminding them because of the recent events, and I invite in the middle of the first page is titled Cap on Interest Rate, and I invite, of course, the Colonel to assist us in understanding that act in case we have made any misinterpretations, but it's a complex act, and it's not something we normally deal with, so this is always a good time to discuss it. But anyway, that's the extent of my testimony on this
Thank
bill.
Thank you. Mr. Phillips, are you made aware of foreclosures, property foreclosures? Do you get some lists from our county tax assessors? Would we be able to go down and have that audit to see if any of them are veterans?
Madam Chair, we're unaware of any foreclosures of veterans' properties, but
our current military.
We would be available to discuss that with them if anyone's aware of such an event in violation of the Act.
Thank you very much.
We would work with counties to ensure that the Act is enforced.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Phillips? Hey, thank you very much for being here, Colonel Mike Caldwell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director, Oregon Military Department. Again, this is very similar to the earlier discussion we had, reference the Servicemen Civil Relief Act. And again, I think that the soldiers are protected, guardsmen are protected, reservists are protected. If they if they fall within this, in if they choose to enact their rights under this act. Again, this might be a situation where putting it in Oregon Revised Statute may help a whole lot of people throughout the state understand it a little better. And with that, I'll just take your questions if you have any.
Thank you. It's kind of like we're reconnecting our veterans' rules. It's like yesterday we voted on the reconnect to the federal tax code for the state. Representative Bogus?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So basically, Mike, what you're saying is the old adage, if it's in the state code, when someone goes to look, they're going to find it. And so therefore, it's more likely to be followed than than the federal rule, even though the federal rule overrules.
Madam Chair, Representative Bogus, yes. I think as is indicated, you know, the plus to the revenue department for leaning forward to inform tax assessors and counties that this is part of the Civil Relief Act, the Servicemen Civil Relief Act. But a lot of times I've noticed when I get calls from people of all shapes and colors, local governments, et cetera, is they say, well, we looked in the statutes and we didn't see it. And we've tried to do that with employment laws throughout the years in this body. And most generally, that's what we deal with when the legislature comes in, is trying to reconnect the federal benefits with state benefits, because typical HR managers and other county administrators and city administrators and anybody in Oregon, for that matter, they go to the ORS, they pull it open, they look, and they see what it says. And sometimes that becomes an issue. Might add one other anecdotal comment. The state can elect to claim sovereign immunity against or away from any federal law. And that has occurred at least one time that I'm aware of under SAFE on a Reemployment Rights Act. And SAFE claimed sovereign immunity. Which I found very fascinating, but nevertheless, it happened. The individual didn't get his job back, and they used that sovereign immunity the state has the right to claim. So by putting it in the ORS, I guess then what you do is you say that this is the state's policy. And so regardless of the sovereign immunity, it doesn't apply because the state's policy is this.
Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize if this is something that's already been dealt with earlier in the hearing when I wasn't here. The Service Members Civil Relief Act, does that apply to state service as well as the federal service?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, no, it does not.
So this actually is an expansion then of a soldier's rights under the law, because this would apply to state service, as I understand the bill.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I did not interpret it in that state, because it doesn't specifically talk about state active duty, which is truly the state service is state active duty.
It says, if you look, Colonel Caldwell, up in the summary, limits interest that may be charged on delinquent property taxes imposed. Am I on the right one?
Mm-hmm.
Imposed on property of members of organized militia called into the active service. I want these kids to know that the Oregon Guard was the original Minutemen, right?
That is correct.
In history, when you study that. Okay.
Well,
that does include on property of members of organized militia called into active service.
Madam Chair, on lines 12 and 13, it defines state service member, it means member of the organized militia called into active service of the state by the governor.
I stand corrected. It does say that, so you're exactly right.
If I understand it correctly, then this is actually an expansion beyond the Service Members Civil Relief Act, because it would apply to state service as well as Title X service.
Good catch, Representative Barnhart.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, yes, I think your interpretation is correct. I think that perhaps if we want to get to where the discussion was going, we're going to have to probably amend this, because we're talking specifically state service under 399.065, which is our statutory language that allows the governor has to call us into state service. Typically, I would tell you that the longest serving, in my 30 years, the longest I've seen state service is about 20 days. That's the length. So in the real sense of things, it probably is not going to impact a whole lot of people.
Well, let's just hope our firefighting season does not go on forever and ever as anticipated.
A knock on wood, yes, ma'am.
Any other questions to the good colonel? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on House Bill 2844? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2844, and I'm going to open the hearing on House Bill 2846.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2846 exempts homesteads owned by 100% disabled veterans from property taxes. It permits veterans who are eligible for property tax exemption and who are at least 70% disabled to defer the remaining property taxes on that homestead. This would apply to tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2006.
Thank you very much. I want to inform the students that if you'd like to testify, you simply need to put your name under the paper that has the bill. And if you'd like to come up and say you know, you believe this is a good bill, that's all you have to say, and you're welcome to do so. Okay. I'd like to call Mr. Ray, Harley Ray.
Madam Chair and committees, for the record, my name is Harley Ray. I represent the Oregon American Legion. House Bill 2846, I believe, is a very good bill. I believe that the thing is, it really needs to be a little bit of amendment to it.
Okay, sir, where?
You have in here a limit of how much a member, a person, a veteran or a disabled veteran can make. For example, on 19, it's line 19, it's 8,778, and on line 20, it's $11,497. If a veteran is 100% disabled, he is going to make approximately $28,000 a year off that disability. So you're actually exempting him or her from that this bill by putting that limit in there. And I think the bill should be amended to just drop line 19 and 20.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much, and
thank
we'll be
you.
Talking with you a little more about
yes.
this. And I'll call Mr. McDonald and Mr. Phillips, please.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon veterans other than the American Legion. House Bill 2846 is basically includes parts of what is already in House Bill 2865, 2945, and 3308. We first look at what's good for veterans and what's good for Oregon. As Mr. Ray stipulated on line 19 and 20, the amounts are pitiful as far as earnings go. And I look at the bill on line 14. It says one duly licensed physician can certify. If I stub my toe, that licensed physician could give me 0% or 100%. He has no guidance as to percentage of disability. The Veterans Administration and the military do have guidance or rules that stipulate for a certain disability you get so much percentage. I think a duly licensed physician should be taken off this. It should not be there because he does has no guidance. It's unfair to the veteran, unfair to the physician that has to make the decision. We think the bill is repeated in other bills. And we think that it's unfair to the city and county for a 100% veteran, which I'm one of, to get a deferment on my taxes, even if I own a $5 million home, which I don't. But it's really we really feel it's unfair.
Unfair to what?
Unfair for someone to that has 100% disability to get 100% of his taxes rescinded.
And why would that be?
I think it's because I just don't think that the county and cities can afford it. I think it's great for veterans, and I'd love to have it.
That's
ma'am, I get it. I'm
going to
give you a kiss if I get it. But
McDonald, that's who we're working for. Unless you start to work
but,
for the League of County.
But we have to be fair to Oregon, too.
Okay. Thank
and
you
if you want to pass it on, that's fine. On the part on line 27 on page 3, we'd like to have the duly licensed physician taken out of that.
I'm sorry, where is that?
On line 27, page 3.
Oh, page 3. See, that was already in there. You're well aware of that.
Mm-hmm. And that...
You put that in here a few years ago?
Excuse me, ma'am?
Did you yourself put that in here a few years ago?
No, ma'am. We just think the bill is repetitive with other bills, and we think that 2865 is really the way to go. With
2864?
65, ma'am.
I think it's already there. Madam Chair,
yes,
clarification.
Sir.
Mac, you mentioned 2865. That's the bill revenue already has, isn't it?
2865 was heard in the Revenue Committee, and we've already testified on it and asked for changes to be made to it. We asked that the duly licensed physician be taken out and that the total pay of an individual line 12 through 23 be taken out of this bill totally. 100% disabled veteran would not be able to... fit under this bill, and neither would a retired master sergeant with 40% disability. So we'd like to, on 2865, we'd like to have 12 through...
Excuse me. We're discussing 2846, and that's all we can discuss at this time. You'll have to come back later.
Okay.
Alligator.
Madam Chair, a minute ago, Mr. McDowell, you were talking about some kind of a limitation on... expensive homes. Are you talking about what are you? Could you be more specific?
The way I read this bill,
the bill exempts everything. That's right.
That's everything.
But what would you like to do instead?
Well, I'd like to have 200. The new homes built up around where I live in West Salem go from 240,000 up to 300,000. So if you put a $300,000 limit on it, I think that would be fair, and that's taken in consideration that houses are jumping through the loop as far as going up in price, so it'd take care of the next couple of years,
so
too.
Just cap it.
I'd put a cap on it, yes, definitely.
Okay, Mr. Phillips.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips, the Oregon Department of Revenue. The department doesn't support or oppose this bill, but there are some points that we would hope the committee would consider in clarifying what your policy decision would be as you deliberate. The first point I'd like to make in my prepared testimony also is that the deferral component of this bill blends a little bit of the property tax partial exemption that exists in statute with a deferral program, but it doesn't necessarily link this deferral program with existing other deferral programs. So this would, in our estimation, would create a new deferral program that would be administered by the counties. Right now, there are no deferral programs administered by the county, so this would require a new program for that. There is no mention of the funds that would pay for the deferral or the entity that would also cover that payment. So if it's intended not to be funded, then would presume that the counties and the cities and the local governments would fund this program. But that's not specified. Also not specified is the time frame for repayment. In the existing deferral programs that are found in Chapter 311 for seniors, disabled, and special assessment deferrals, there's a delineation of the time frame by which the deferred payments are then eventually repaid. And there's no mention in the bill about if and when those repayments occur, so it's not clear to us what your intention would be. I did provide in the
Senate... We're certainly going to have to talk to the Legislative Council that failed to put that in here. I'm just...
As you wish.
They try so hard to get everything in, and wouldn't you know it, we'd miss one.
Maybe this.
We're going to tell them to call you next time when they're drafting a bill.
Be happy to. In the center of the bill, I just put a little bit of a visual of what I think the bill does, because that's the only way I can understand it. And so I think it does provide levels of assessed value for certain conditions, depending on what the disability is and various other conditions, and then when the deferral kicks in. And I hope that's clear. If it's not, I'd be happy to clarify that.
Could you give a copy to Mr. Ray? back in of this?
Yes, I believe I sent him an email yesterday.
He has a copy, ma'am.
Yes.
He showed it to me this morning.
Good.
The bill also appears to make this an optional program because it says the service member may, and then it later talks about prescribing it, and so it's not clear to us whether it's a permissive on the part of the service member or whether it's required.
We always have to say may because we can't tell them what to do with their life.
Okay. And finally, I guess the only other point I'd make is at the bottom of the page on my handout is that the department, and it's very gracious of you to offer that the department get the prevailing attorney fees in this, even though we've got no part of whatsoever of the deferral or the litigation, but we're brought in to receive payment of the prevailing attorney's fees, and it's possible that that was not the intention. So,
they will have to discuss that with legislative council. I get they where the mind is, that's where they all go. So that'll be a great fund if we can find it somewhere.
Be happy to.
We'll use it for a better. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, if not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2846. I'm going to open one on House Bill 2945. Mr. Administrator.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2945 indexes the amount of property tax exemption for veterans' residences and gross income limitation to changes in the cost of living as measured by the U.S. City Average Consumer Price Index. It applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2006.
Thank you very much. I'd like to call upon the good Representative Hunt. We'll allow you to speak now. You're on the other side.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is actually, I think, a very small focus piece. We've been having all these discussions about property tax deferral and other related issues. This really just gets at one piece within the statute right now. We have an adjustment. We've been talking about the eligible property tax exemption for disabled veterans, which you can see outlined in the existing part of the statute under this bill. There's one set of levels for those who are disabled, a slightly higher level for those who have a service-connected disability. If you go back in the legislative history in 1955, which was probably the last time, Madam Chair, we had a Veterans Affairs Committee, the legislature actually did increase the maximum amount that could be exempted from $1,500 to $7,500 at that point. So they made major progress at that point. The problem is they didn't add in any kind of inflation adjustment factor. And so if you fast forward until the late 1990s, the legislature at that point adjusted it up from $7,500 only to $8,750, even though it had only already been 45 years at that point. But they did at least add in a 3% annual adjustment factor for that property tax exemption. So that was a good thing. The challenge is, if you look at the history of this program, if you look at the last 50 years, in 26 of the last 50 years, inflation has exceeded 3%. So looking forward, if we have just that 3% continuing, disabled veterans are going to lose ground in how much they have to exempt every year. I would not argue at all that we shouldn't also increase the exemption level and increase the income requirements for this, as some others have focused on some other bills. But this bill just deals with the one piece of adding a cost of living adjustment. So the exemption level will adjust up every year, either 3% or the cost of living, whichever is greater. So disabled vets are guaranteed at least a 3% additional increase in the exemption level. But if inflation is 4, 5, 6, 10%, then it would adjust up at that level. And that will really protect these veterans who are dealing with these challenging circumstances. I just looked in my county alone, and there were 3,300 veterans who took advantage of this exemption last year alone. So I'm sure that's multiplied out among all. I couldn't get a statewide figure, but our county's about 1% of the state, so you can multiply that. Excuse me, about 10% of the state, so you can multiply that out. It's probably over 30,000 veterans who take advantage of this every year. Again, disabled veterans. I would also note, if you look back to 1955, again, when the legislature set the exemption level at $7,500 in 1955 was about one-third of the value of an average house. The exemption level today being either 10,000 or 14,000, depending on whether it's service connected, there aren't. That is certainly not one third of the value of the average house in Oregon today. It's far, far in excess of that. And so this certainly does not make up for all the ground that we've lost over the last several decades, but it hopefully guarantees that going forward that disabled veterans never again would lose ground, that they would always be guaranteed the 3% or the cost of living increase in the amount that's exempt from property tax.
Good bill. Representative Hunt and Representative Farr. Questions? Representative Kahn.
Representative Hunt, how did you determine the, you just went by the previous statute for the disabilities of 40%? Yeah, I was wondering about the percent.
Correct, yes. Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Comp. We did not change the disability rating. We didn't even change the income, base income requirements, which I think are very restrictive, even though approximately 30,000 vets in Oregon took advantage of this. If you all would be open to that, we'd be happy to amend that index up as well. But as it stands, we stuck with the current income guidelines, the current disability exemption, and just added the cost of living adjustment.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? I'd like to call, thank you very much, Representative Pound. I'd like to call Dave Berenberg from the League of Oregon Cities.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I apologize. I am not David Berenberg. I'm Michelle Dicer with the League. David was sitting in for me, and I'm now available.
Well, you're much prettier.
Well, bless your heart. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I just wanted to mention that in terms of the cost of living adjustment, we have no issue with a COLA being applied to the income of the individual. Wanted to point out, though, that the property tax rate that someone pays is already limited to the 3%. So I'm not quite sure that I understand why you would apply the COLA to the actual amount that is being exempted.
Let's ask Representative Hunt.
I think the challenge is that only applies to a person who would stay in the same home over time. If you look at having just moved into a different house, which is a 1997 house instead of a 1920 house, which we lived in previously, the value of that home is and the property taxes connected with that home are significantly different. And so I think if we left the standard with just the 3%, that would probably work for people who stayed in the same home if it was an older home. Where that property tax was true, but would not cover those who moved into newer homes.
That makes sense, Michelle.
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, that does help. I would urge the committee to consult or confer with the county property tax assessors to see how difficult applying a cost of living adjustment might be to this particular segment of the population.
You know, just what we're most interested in is how easily we can help our veterans.
Understood.
So, scratch that. We probably won't do that, but it's a good idea. But let's look after the veterans. I mean, surely we can do something like that. Okay, Michelle?
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. O'Reilly and Mr. McDonald.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. We look at this bill, and it's almost identical on the front page to 2865. Again, we'd like to have lines 12 through 23 eliminated. No matter if you make 40% disabled, you won't be fitting under the guidelines there. On line 27, we'd like that to be 25,000 as a minimum. It's my understanding that the tax assessor cannot raise your value of your house more than 3% a year. Is that correct? That is correct. Then that's the only changes we'd like to have. That'll take out the duly licensed physician It'll take out the amount of money income from a disabled veteran. If you're 100% disabled veteran, you make approximately $27,000 a year. And this would just wipe him out. It'd wipe 90%, 80%, 70% disabled veteran right out with the figures you have here. I'd like to have no limit on the income for the disabled veteran.
A few minutes ago, Mr. McDonald, 100% disabled got $28,000. Now, which is it?
Ma'am, I get $2,300 a month.
I don't know. You're the one who said it.
I'm 100% disabled.
Is it 28 or 27?
Well, three totals.
I don't know. You're the best math.
Madam Chair, your disabled base is based on what pay you receive when you exit, whether you were a private, a major, or a colonel. So almost every single veteran, based on the time they exit, may be different.
Thank you.
But
very
the math
much.
Is 27,600.
The max.
The math.
$27,600. Boy, are you straightened out?
Yes, ma'am. and I'm a former math teacher.
That's all right. Yeah, I'm not too self either. Just a few. Okay, so that can differ, and if we made that fit all, according to Representative Boquist, you're happy with it. Thank you. Mr. O'Reilly, nice to see you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's good to be here again. My name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm with the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. And we'll just speak to this bill without a whole. We support the bill. We think tying the increase to the greater of the two, the U.S. City Average Consumer Price Index, or the 3%, is inappropriate means of
Kevin,
exemption.
Could you speak a little louder?
I could try real quick.
In my ears or something.
I'm sorry to hear that, ma'am.
There we go. Okay.
We support the bill.
Oh, great. Good news. It's good news day, Kevin.
It's just there.
All right. Thank you. And is there anyone else on this bill? I guess that's it. There's no representative. Who are you?
Far. Thank you, Madam Chair. Kevin, do you have any figures, and we've probably already been provided with this data, I just don't have it in front of me, how many paralyzed veterans, either you or Mr. McDonald, that we have residing in Oregon?
We have over 300 paralyzed veterans who are members of our chapter.
And that would be 40% or more disabled?
That would definitely.
Okay.
And I'm sure there's others who are members of our chapter. I know a couple guys who belong to California or Washington chapters.
Kevin, will you be testifying on 3095 or 3308? Okay.
I didn't
want you to have to move if you are. Will you, Mr. McDonald? Either one of you go.
Let me get my slip.
I've got to go.
Okay. Like we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2945 unless there's additional comment or questions. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3095 and 3308.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3095 allows individuals ordered to active military service to defer property tax payment for the duration of the service. This applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2006. House Bill 3308 exempts homesteads of war veterans and their surviving spouses from property tax liability. This would also apply to tax years beginning January 1st, 2006.
Representative Hunt.
If I could just say from here, Madam Chair, just briefly, rather than giving formal testimony on this, this is obviously an attempt to focus on deferral. I think if the committee is going to focus on the broader exemption, then we don't need to pursue this. If you decide you want to pursue the more narrow, cheaper deferral option, this may be a route. I think the case has already been made in terms of the need. This would be a more narrow way of meeting it, but I'd be happy to support the other.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Phillips, Colonel Caldwell, and Mr. McDonald. House Bill 3095, please. Colonel Caldwell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director, Oregon Military Department. We would support, I know you're running out of time, so I would, defer to Representative Hunt's comments. Whichever direction the committee chooses to go, we would support either or.
Thank you so much. Mr. Phillips.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips with the Department of Revenue. I'd be happy to work with the committee on amendments to clarify some of the issues that we have, which I've detailed in my handout. If there are any questions.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, Oregon veterans support this bill.
Well, Mr. McDonald, thank you. This is wonderful that we don't have to a big change there for you. You're making our day. Thank you, gentlemen. And how? Let's go to House Bill 3308, please, and stay there. I think you're Mr. Phillips, you've got to come back. Oh, okay. Well, now, y'all, I just want to explain to you that that I'm the sponsor of this bill. In meeting with many, many veterans in this state, this seemed to be what they had asked me for. And all I can say is they deserve any property tax exemption, and I'm here to support them. So I've said what needs to be said on House Bill 3308 for the veterans who talked with me about this. That's where this came from. And I'm for them. Okay, Colonel Caldwell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director, Oregon Military Department. From the department standpoint, Madam Chairman, we're neutral on the bill. We don't have a comment either way.
Thank you, Colonel. Mr. Phillips.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips, the Oregon Department of Revenue. We don't have a position either way on this bill either, although I just call your attention to line 28 on page 1. Starts out any war veteran, and the way we would probably have to interpret that is that any war veteran would mean any war veteran anywhere from any country serving for any.
Where is that? Line 28.
Line 28. So if it was a Canadian veteran or a Afghanistan veteran.
Thank you for catching that.
That's the only point I have.
Good catch.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Madam McDonald, Oregon veterans, we support the bill.
Thank you so much. Wow, twice in a row. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on either one of these bills? Michelle, come on up now, but don't make us worry about the tax assessor. We've got a good one in my county, I'll tell you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Michelle Dicer with the League of Oregon Cities. I just wanted to say that there are a number of property tax exemption bills that both you and I think the Revenue Committee have been considering. We, from a local standpoint, would urge both committees to confer and to prioritize those because I think everyone would agree that nobody can afford to do everything that we would like.
Well, the most important thing is nobody's as smart as everybody, my philosophy in life.
Indeed.
Together we learn from each other, and we'll do that, of course.
Okay.
And good advice.
I would just,
I won't hold it against you. Look out for that tax assessor.
I would just urge folks to keep in mind that these veterans who are overseas and serving their both the active duty folks who are overseas will be coming back to communities that they've been fighting to defend, and we want them to be whole, and we want them to be able to provide those services that they expect as residents of those communities. And so hence my request that these things be looked at in their totality in terms of their impacts at the local level. I've passed out a copy of a letter that a former League of Oregon Cities president and a Vietnam-era Marine Corps veteran addressed to the members of this committee, and she's a really fantastic individual, and is very sorry that she could not be here in person to speak with you. So
we are very sorry she's not here either, and I want to go on the record in response to what she wrote and say this. The people who have been helping the veterans in this state since 1859 has not been her or you or me. I mean, it has been all the veterans that were there with them and still to this day. And never, ever have these veterans lobbied us in this legislature like this or like others do. Never. And they're very humble.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to go on the record to her and say they deserve anything and any benefit we could give them. We've done so little for them, far less than we've done for other citizens, I must say.
And, Madam Chair, I'm happy to convey that to her.
Thank you. So we appreciate all her efforts and yours. Thank you. Is there any other testimony on House Bill 3095 and 3308? If not, I want to tell my two remaining members, Representative Hunt and Representative Comp, thank you for staying. And House Bill 2910 and House Bill 3096 are believed to already be in the reconnect that we we passed through the House yesterday. We will verify that to be positive sure with Butler. But since we brought this up, it was my understanding that one, like the child care one that I had brought up, were included. So, is that okay?
I think you're right, at least in terms of 3096.
Okay.
I'm wondering, Madam Chair, to make sure that this makes it all the way through the building, since that bill we passed yesterday has 23 different provisions. I can't remember how many it has.
Oh, it has a lot of
maybe more than that. Representative Kopp, who's on the Revenue Committee.
Yeah, omnibus.
But I'm wondering if we would be wise.
It's a hippopotamus.
I'm wondering, Madam Chair, if we would be wise, not today, but to go ahead and move this to make sure that at least this one piece does not get lost in the wider shuffle over the bill, because who knows what's going to happen in the rest of the process with that bill.
So
that
very good
that would be my only concern, because we want to make sure that these combat zone compensation are not taxed.
Speaking to a particular bill.
He said particularly 3096 he thought was included, but we're not sure about 2910. So would it be okay if y'all give me a minute to check on that?
Absolutely.
Which means several minutes until next Tuesday. Please and thank you, and I look forward to seeing you in the air on Friday. This meeting is adjourned.